Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the Omega Line agent.
Okay. It's been a couple of weeks. We took a rare break for us.
The worst 2 weeks
we've all three
of us have ever experienced.
That's what I was going to say. It was due to circumstances out of our control. Like, we could have recorded last week, but we were all just pretty much mentally exhausted. Matt caught a little hoarse voice from, yelling at somebody or something. It sounded like he was choking on a dick. So, we just were like, all around it was just like, we were mentally going, let's just take a week off and recharge our battery, so to speak. But snowstorms across Texas, which is extremely rare for us. And, the northerners wanted to make fun of us for it, which was kind of rude of some of them. But they have no fucking clue that we truly weren't prepared for that. Now, you can get into the politics of it, whether the power grid people dropped the ball. And that's a whole nother story. But when it comes down to the reality of it is, we really aren't prepared for that in Texas. I mean, we don't do 12-degree weather.
Yeah. And they don't do hot weather. I mean, they shut down schools for 90 degrees up north. So,
oh, I know. They say, and I hear about northerners go, it gets to 90 here. I guarantee your 90 is not our 90. Not even close. I mean, we have, our 90 is so much humidity and moisture coming off the air that you're peeling your clothes off of you in the afternoon.
Exactly.
It's a different type of 90. But Southerners don't make fun of them for it, but Northerners sure like to point out. It's like they like to jab at Texas whenever they can, And
it's kind of like your big brother, he's always beating up on you. Texas, we're just awesome, man. We wake up in the morning, we piss excellence. And then these other states, they have to take shots at us whenever they can because we're just badasses. We've got big shit, So, hey, let them have their day. They can win the battle. We're going to take the war.
I will be on 2 weeks tomorrow night since the storm hit without water at the house. So I'm, don't worry, I'm not ripe. I've gone to my mom's for showers and stuff, but my beard is starting to get a little funky long and other places it might not have been Manscaped, but wait, no, I didn't say that. But, so I'm a little irritated at this point with the whole thing. And, so I guess I need to release some of that irritation by doing a good show for people.
There we go.
I know Long just got his water back yesterday. So you were waiting as well.
Yeah.
Once I get water back, I'm just going to fill up that bathtub and just soak my sorrows away in it.
Have a glass of wine on the side.
That's right. Enjoy some wine and some bath water. Anyway, the North can keep that shit. That's all I know. I'm no thanks. So I'll take my heat and humidity over that 12-degree bullshit.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I just don't like living under the constant annual fear of hurricane landings. And now I have to look forward to winter storms.
I'm like,
Yeah.
I hate it. Trauma tax is what they call it here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, anyways. Yeah. And mosquitoes.
Yeah. So, yeah, mosquitoes.
Yeah. Well, I guess let's officially get into the show then. We've got a lot to talk about today. There's a 2 weeks worth of news. Quite a bit of news to do later on. A good movie to talk about. And let's get into Download This, what we've watched, streamed, checked out lately, and on the show, whoever wants to go first.
Matt, I'll go ahead.
Yeah, I got quite a bit. I watched some free movies on Amazon. Long, I talked to you about it last week. Because I was just like, man, a certain MMA fighter had been circling the headlines. So I was like, I want to see what kind of standalone movies she's done. I need to rewatch Haywire.
Oh yeah, that's right.
But I watched Daughter of the Wolf, which is like the only one that you can tag yourself in on Facebook. And I was like trying to.
He's talking about Gina Carano movies, by the way.
Yeah,
he's trying to hide her name for some reason.
Yeah, Gina Carano. So I was watching Daughter of the Wolf, and it's horrible. You've got
Haywire is not that much better.
Yeah, Haywire is at least like C+ kind of stuff. This is like F. Like Daughter of the Wolf is like F. I won't even get into it. It sucks. I mean, there's a couple times where she like falls and she stares at the camera and she looks very pretty and stuff. But there's just the action's not there. The storyline isn't there. It just sucks. And then there's another movie I watched called In the Blood. That one's better. She's just basically this, out for revenge, newlywed wife. These people hijacked Danny Trejo's in it. The guy from Waiting, the nasty Louis Guzman, he was in Waiting. He was the guy who was always showing his testicles to everybody. He's in it. And she's trying to find her husband. They're using him as like this freaking bag for stem cells. So this gangster can get his cancer treatments. She's beating the shit out of guys. She's like, you don't want to tell me where he is? All right, I'm going to stab you in the freaking face. And then I'm like, this is awesome. This is her niche. But even that, was like kind of like D plus movie. And then I watched Scorched Earth. That one's another like D minus kind of thing. Good idea. Just the acting's kind of, as you would expect, not that great. Haywire was better. But still not super. I mean, you've got Bill Paxton in it. You've got Michael Douglas. You've got Ewan McGregor. And then the ladies, Channing Tatum, he's in it. So you got that going for it. Oh, and Antonio Banderas, which, he's probably just hopping on to anything that he can get at this point in his career.
Yeah.
Like 3 or 4 years ago. And then Long gave me some Godzilla DVDs, and I rewatched the original Godzilla. I watched Mechagodzilla 2, and watched Godzilla versus Destoroyah. And Jackie surprised me this week. So we finally got power back during the storm. I had her watch Creed, and she loved it. She watched Creed 2, and then she's like, now I want to watch the other Rocky movies. So we watched Rocky 1 and 2, and mm-hmm. I'd forgotten how emotional 2 is. 2 is like, it's got a lot of emotions in it. And I was like, man, I guess I kind of side with Mark a little bit. I put 2 a little higher now. Cause for me, it was always like Rocky 4. I was like, man, that's the best one. His best friend dies and he's like, I'm going to avenge him. You've got the
4's not even better. 4's not even better than 3. I've told you this. Even 3's better than 4.
Yeah.
Four is so overrated. It's not that great.
It's a simple revenge story, really. And so I get the I get your ranking now more. I see the flaws in my original rating. I was hyping one part, one aspect of 4 into like, man, it's like the second or third best Rocky film, maybe even the best kind of thing.
Mark, you could say that you pity the fool.
Mr. T is such a good shit talker in that movie.
I could be called Mr. T. Real man.
Yeah, you could. You could.
Yeah.
Mr. Tran, Mr. T.
But I was a substitute teacher, and I once went up in front of a class, and I said, all right, my name is Mr. Tran. You could call me Mr. T. If that's you don't awesome. Turn in your homework, I pity the fool who don't turn in your homework.
That's awesome, so, man.
Yeah. So out of the second round of Godzilla movies, you said you liked which one the most?
I think I like Destoroyah more, even though I think Mechagodzilla 2 has like better special effects
fights.
And better fights. I think like just Godzilla being on fire through the whole time, and then it's this, you're kind of like, you know,
it looks painful.
It looks painful. You kind of feel bad for Godzilla. I feel like there's more emotion there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a different kind of film. Maybe Mechagodzilla is better. But, you know, after watching Destroy, it was just, it hit different for me.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really good film, and it was a really good send off. Yeah. And I guess they, what, they restart the franchise with, is it Shin Godzilla, or they restart it with Destroy All Monsters? That's the next one.
No, I don't know what's in your stack. Oh, is it GMK? GMK, Godzilla, Mothra,
yep.
King Ghidorah. Oh, man, that's the next one you're going to have to watch. Matt's finally going to be able to watch GMK. Oh, yeah, I can't wait for your opinion on that one.
Yeah, that's next on the list.
That's a reboot. Now, it has ties to the original movie, and that's it. Because you're getting into the Godzilla Millennium era, and every movie in the from 1999 to 2004, it's like their own film basically, except for Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla.
Oh, okay.
there's a third Mechagodzilla movie in that era.
Is it a reboot, or is it like a third one, basically?
It's a reboot.
Okay.
Yeah, the Millennium era is just full of reboots and original stories. Nothing connected, not like the 90s Godzilla movies, you know? So you don't have to really worry about that, except for Godzilla Against Mechagodzilla and Godzilla Tokyo SOS. I don't know if that's in your stack or not. It might be.
I know the... Against Mechagodzilla is,
yeah,
Tokyo SOS is in there.
Yeah, those two are connected.
And then Final Wars,
yeah,
Shin,
yeah,
and then the Gamera,
yeah,
and Troll Hunter movies.
Yeah. Oh, you're almost done, buddy. You almost caught up. So anyhow, are you done with your download this?
Yeah. On to you.
On to me. Only two things, and I'll keep it brief. When I got home from dinner, I watched the 1967 movie of Gamera versus Gauss, and that's a pretty wild. It's a really good kaiju movie that's not made by Toho. A little cheesy special effects, but man, I could see the aspiration in it. Gauss is a giant bat that shoots lasers out of his mouth. It's a pretty wild kaiju movie.
Nice.
Very bloody too, because Studio the Daya or something, that are the competing studio against Toho. So they are making kaiju movies to compete against the Toho monster movies. So in order to do that, they have to appeal to kids more, and then it's bloody. It's weird. Nice. Yeah, really bloody monster battles, you know. And other than that, two weeks ago, Christopher Plummer died, and the actor. And I decided to watch Star Trek VI for some reason. I watched Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And, man, he just chews up the scenery in that. And he said
he played the bad guy in that?
Yeah, he played a Klingon. Oh. Yeah, he played the Klingon named General Chang, and it's kind of funny. He never liked his character in Sound of Music because he thought it was pretty boring, but he really enjoyed playing General Chang, the Klingon general, and quoting all these Shakespearean lines and stuff. Yeah, and he's really good. I watched it just to watch him act, and it's a great movie overall. Not my favorite, but still a great Star Trek movie. That's my download this. I mean, besides work and freezing my butt off, I played Uno with my roommate.
Oh yeah, I saw your cards, the Mario cards, right?
Yeah, Super Mario Edition Uno cards.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you, Mark? What's your download this?
Yeah, I didn't watch a whole lot of stuff, but I am. In my time with no power, I read some comics. I had never read the Infinity Gauntlet before, and I had picked up a copy of it at Half Price Books a while back, and it was sitting on my shelf. So I finally sat down and read the Infinity Gauntlet. And it's funny because you had texted about the Infinity Gauntlet, and I didn't want to say anything that I had read it just recently. And the Infinity Gauntlet is more like it's infinite. Like if you watch the movies, Infinity War actually, I don't know what comic that's really taken from. Infinity Gauntlet is more closer to Endgame. We're trying to figure out how to stop Thanos. Obviously, it's much, much different because you have the X-Men involved and lots of other characters. You have Mephisto in there.
Mephisto, yeah.
And Dr. Doom is involved. And so it's much, much different. But there's some similarities to the things they did in Endgame as far as trying to stop Thanos in the Infinity Gauntlet. But it's an interesting read. It's definitely a 90s, because that came out, early 90s, I believe. It's got that 90s comic book feel to it. It's very fast-paced. Thanos is much a more, kind of a little bit cheesily written compared to the Thanos that you saw on screen. But it's good stuff from Jim Starlin and the, I can't think of the other writer who did it.
It was Jim Starlin all the way. He drew it and wrote it. Yeah, and, I think.
But it's one of those classics. That was sitting there that I felt I needed to read, and I read it. And so I read that, and I reread a favorite of Matt's. I reread Dark Empire, Star Wars.
Nice.
You know, it's been a while since I've read it. I see the flaws in it now, though. Like, it's good, but there's stuff in it, like, they don't really explain how the Emperor comes back. It just sort of happens. It's kind of weird. But yet people were complaining about J.J. Abrams not really explaining how the Emperor came back. Well, they did the same thing in Dark Empire. He just sort of there. It's like, what?
Yeah.
So it's a little bizarre. People that wanted to see that story in the movies or to see Luke act like that, they forget that takes place 5 years after Endor. The sequels were much different. You aren't going to see Luke do things like that. It wouldn't have made sense. Dark Empire is not bad by any means. I mean, it rebooted Star Wars and comics. But reading it 20 years later, you do see some of the flaws in it and stuff. And I really don't like the art style in that book very much at all. It just doesn't fit well for me. But the story makes up for it. So yeah, I took some time to read a couple of comics or something else I read, but I don't remember. I think.
Go ahead.
I reread Old Man Logan, which is one of my favorite Wolverine comics, and I gave it a reread. And what are you saying? Going to say long?
Have you read Dark Knight Returns 3?
Not yet. I read part of it because you sent me the Comicology link, and I just haven't finished it.
Yeah. If you're a fan of Kerry Kelly, you're going to like that series. One of my personal favorite graphic novels growing up. I don't know if I ever mentioned this to y'all, but it's a Justice League / Superman graphic novel called Kingdom Come.
Oh, I've read that. Yeah.
Oh, it's a fantastic. It's still relevant, I feel. Story about, you know, keeping a moral center in the world that's gone crazy. And Superman's trying to, you know, bring order back to all the chaos, you know, and that's really the theme of it. And it's a great, great, one of my favorites. It still holds up today.
Yeah, Kingdom Come is really good.
Yeah, it's excellent. Matt, have you ever read that Kingdom Come?
No, I haven't. I think
you should. It's a must read.
Okay. Yeah. The last Superman comics I ever read were the white and the black book, Superman, The Death of Superman. Me and my cousin thought that was the coolest thing. We had to buy two copies each, though, so that we could keep.
I wouldn't even call Kingdom Come a Superman book, even though he is the central character. It features a lot. Yeah. It features the entire DC universe in it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But basically, it helps if you watch the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. And basically, imagine Christopher Reeve's Superman in that setting of that story. And that really brings a lot of context to it in a way.
Okay. You know?
stunning artwork from Alex Ross. Alex Ross did two books back in the 90s, one for DC and then one for Marvel. He did a book called Marvels for Marvel, and both of them are just amazing work. He did the artwork for Kingdom Come, too.
Yeah, but people have talked more about Kingdom Come than they do Marvels, huh?
Yeah.
It seems so. That way, but Marvels is so good, too. I mean, it's an amazing, it's written by Kurt Busiek, and it's really well done, too. And I think, was it Mark Waid wrote Kingdom Come?
If I remember right. Yeah. Mark Waid is still one of my favorite comic book writers. His run on the Black Widow series, it's a great series of comics on his Black Widow run. It's mostly a visual storytelling.
But other than that, I mean, I watched a couple of episodes of WandaVision the last 2 weeks since we haven't.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
Let's get into that.
Mostly this forgettable. I wouldn't say forgettable. The biggest problem with this show until this new episode is you don't have to watch the whole thing. You can watch the last 5 minutes and get the gist of what happened. I do think this weekend's episode has, as Agatha, the villain, we're going to go ahead and spoil it. The villain was revealed last week to be Agatha, what's her name? Harkness, who is a longtime witch from the comic books and the wife of Mephisto in the comics. We don't know if he's going to show up in this, but it's possible. And so this week's episode, I think, was more important as she takes Wanda on a... to find out where Wanda's powers came from. There was a lot of little things in this episode that you had to pick up on. They basically dropped a huge bombshell of how mutants could exist in the MCU without saying it, as far as how Wanda and Pietro got their powers. So that was kind of big right there in a small way.
Like what, they were born with it or something?
And the explosion caused their powers to manifest, like they've said mutants do. So they dropped. That was a huge drop that you had to really pay attention to. That they could explain how mutants come into the MCU. But yeah, the show, like some people really love it, and some people were kind of like us, kind of in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I do think it's important to what's going to happen with Doctor Strange and everything going forward. But it's just like I think this whole thing could have been done in 2 or 3 episodes. They could have done this in a movie. Instead of a dragged out 9-hour thing,
Yeah.
But what y'all's opinions?
I'm kind of meh. I do realize a lot of the story implications, some of the Easter eggs and all that stuff. But I'm just like, eh. But I don't know. It's not reaching the potential it should be, or cut the pacing is weird to me, and I don't know. I'm just kind of, I do like how Elizabeth Olsen is really acting her ass off, and the actress who plays Agatha Harkness.
Yeah, she's good too. I can't.
She's really good. Yeah, she's really good.
Paul Bettany's really good.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that the Winter Soldier series is good too. I want to see where things go from there.
That's my thing. I keep seeing this stuff on the internet about like, oh, let's make a show about the FBI agent Darcy. No, that would be not be. They work in small doses. I don't want to watch them for 30 minutes.
Yeah.
That's stupid.
Yeah. That's why people shouldn't listen to fans that much.
Kate Jones is very good looking, but their characters aren't interesting enough for me to have a whole show of them.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that we're getting, looks like we're getting Spectrum, because now Agent, Captain Rambow has her powers. Looks like she can, convert light now due to, I guess, passing through the barrier multiple times and, rearrange her molecules multiple times. Looks like that's how they worked it in.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, because at first I was like, I could tell she was having some kind of power. But, I rewatched it because Jackie hadn't watched them, and we just rewatched the whole series, with her. And she was, she resisted Scarlet Witch's power. I guess she wanted to throw her again, but but she resisted. So it was interesting. I was like, oh, you know, she's, you know, I guess she's more powerful than I thought.
Yep.
Man, that reminds me. I watched Willy's Wonderland. I forgot to talk about it.
Nobody wants to talk about that.
Willy's Wonderland rules.
My thing with WandaVision, too, is I'm not thrilled about the cop-out on Pietro, that he was just basically made up by Wanda. I was really hoping that they had the balls to start introducing the mutants and the X-Men through the use of Evan Peters. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little disappointed in that. I'm like, you set up this great, shocking thing that could have been the X-Men coming to the MCU, then you cop it out with like, oh, it was made up by Wanda.
Well, he wasn't made up by Wanda. He was made by Agatha. Agatha Harkness was using
Agatha. But it was because Wanda wanted it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she wanted to see her brother, so that's how she used him as her eyes and ears to try and get more information out of her. But he was too much of a punk, though. He got himself blasted by her, making too many dead husband jokes.
Yeah, and then the post-credit scene in this weekend's episode was pretty interesting, as the possible evil Vision from the comics is going to make an appearance, and created by S.W.O.R.D. So that could be... There's a lot of rumor that Paul Bettany, playing up the actor I always wanted to work with and being a big cameo, is just himself playing the evil Vision. You know, he always wanted to work with himself because...
Wait, there was a post-credits this last episode?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh. How did I miss that? That's weird.
I even put it in chat. You got to watch past the credits.
And so Paul Bettany's been known to troll Marvel fans in the past, so people are wondering if he's trolling Marvel fans again with this final episode next week. But we'll see.
I think it's Doctor Strange. We saw a spellbook locked up, you know, looking like, you know, the tower that Cumberbatch stays in, where everything's like locked up and it's an artifact. And I think this is one of those artifacts.
I mean, that maybe I'm fine if it is Doctor Strange, but I still don't think that's a Luke Skywalker level cameo.
No, you'd have they sold
that way too much to say if it's just Doctor Strange, that's not Luke Skywalker level. You know, that's like maybe Mace Windu level, but not Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. I think you would need like Tony Stark to come back to life or something.
Or even Chris Evans would be almost that level. One of the main two or three, Hulk, Captain America, or Iron Man, that would be it. Anyone else is next level, you know.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
So we'll see you next week with the season finale of WandaVision. Hits Disney Plus. Well, let's get into today's featured film then, because we are moving right along. A movie that we've been talking about doing this for a while, and get around to an extremely popular film. In some ways, this film has become popular just because it's kind of hard to get a hold of for a James Cameron film. It is on Amazon Prime right now, but generally it's not streaming. It's never been released on Blu-ray. The DVDs are out of print, so they're hard to find. I mean, it's been released on Blu-ray overseas, but not in America. And that is James Cameron's action spy flick, True Lies. Basically, Arnold Schwarzenegger plays Harry, who, in his time away from his family, he works for an organization as a spy. And his wife thinks he's some sort of sales rep that goes to work every day and runs a 9-to-5 job and comes home to the family. And if he's home late because he's killing bad guys, he says he's in sales meetings. That becomes kind of a running joke throughout the film, as he's always in sales meetings. And, of course, things go wrong, and she eventually finds out that he is not a sales rep, as she gets captured too, as Harry gets into some deep shit. And Arnold does what Arnold does best and saves the world. I think that's a pretty basic summary of this film.
Very succinct.
Yes.
But, I bought a bootleg Blu-ray of this a couple months ago, and I watched parts of it just to see the quality of Blu-ray, but I didn't really sit down and watch it. And I sat down and watched this for the first time in quite a while, and this movie is really good.
Yes.
It's also strangely a little bit messily edited for a Cameron film, There's a lot of quick cuts. It's not as clean as Terminator or some of or The Abyss or some of his films. But I guess it works for the style of this film because it's supposed to be kind of quick-paced and action-packed. And it certainly is. The movie moves at a brisk pace. There's really nothing slow in the film. But watching it again, man, I'm like, I just forgot like how many one-liners are in it and how good the action sequences are. The jet fighter sequence at the end of the film is still like, wow, this is really cool stuff. I can't even think 20 years later of a movie I've seen that's pulled off something like that cool looking. And you know, I know I saw this in theaters back in the day. I don't know if you did, Matt, you were a little young, but,
yeah,
you know, I know this is one of those on the top of your list for Arnold films and the fan you are today.
Yes, definitely. I was, one of the people that caught it on home video, where it accumulated $18 million on home video, as many action films from Arnold did. It's a big home video contributor. But yeah, this film is definitely a top five Arnold film anywhere you cut it. I mean, some people may have it number 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. You know, a lot of people like Total Recall, Terminator 2, even Terminator. You know, some of us even put Last Action Hero pretty high, but this is definitely a top five.
No, you put it very high.
I do. I because, you know, I think it's bad in like the best way. And that's why I think it's cool, you know, but his comedy in this movie is just on the money, just every single time, especially whenever he's all loopy and he's getting, you know, he's telling Helen that they're, you know, are we going to die? Oh, yeah. First, they're going to torture us, or they're going to blow our brains out. Or they're, you know, stop talking. And then whenever he, the torturer asks him if he has anything he wants to say before he dies, he's like, yeah. He's like, I was thinking about breaking your neck. How are you going to do that? You know, my handcuffs, I picked them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that there's some really good comedy in here. I mean, everything's on the mark, but I feel like Bill Paxton kind of steals the show. I mean, just that scene alone where he's talking about his wife. Titties want to make you beg for buttermilk. Ask like a 10-year-old boy. Blah, which I still don't get to this day. But, hey, you know, whatever folks you want, I guess.
But, you know, every time I tell you, we're doing this movie a few days after the anniversary of Bill Paxton's passing. And every time I see a movie, though, with Bill, and it just – he's one of those actors I really miss, you know? Yeah. I mean, sometimes you watch a movie and you're like, oh, it sucks he's not here anymore. But, like, Paxton, like, I really miss every time I see him on screen. There's a charisma about him that just chews the screen. I mean, you're in a movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of the biggest action stars in the world back in 1994, and you're stealing screen time from him because you're just so charismatic and good in your scenes. And that's hard to do, you know?
And the Scream Queen. You got Jamie Lee Curtis on here, too. She's great.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she does a good job of playing kind of a lost damsel in distress, not sure what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to – I think we have to give marks to the proper recognition to the villain. He's a very smart antagonist. You know, mm-hmm. He's always one step ahead somehow – of the the Omega Center,
because he's paranoid, that's why.
Yeah. And he's resourceful and smart. I think one of the funniest scenes in there, when he was doing his jihadist message, the dude was recording on the camcorder.
The battery dies.
And it's like, we're out of power.
Which is something that, what's funny about that too is a lot of action movies, they'll have comedy with the good guys, right? But they never, the bad guys are always really serious. And I'm glad that Cameron took the time to make the bad guys a little funny too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What else? Oh, and freaking abusing government resources to spy on his wife.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, so many laws are broken, I'm sure.
Tom Arnold's telling him, like, you can't do that. You can't do that. And then Tom Arnold's like, okay, we're going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
He's like, what about stop that trying to chip me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Her head's in his lap.
Yeah. Man, and Tia Carrera. It's very beautiful.
Yeah. Very, yeah.
I almost forgot she was in this movie till she came on screen. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's in this.
She's yeah. like a vindictive bitch pretty well, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, of course, the action sequences still hold up. And I think True Lies is like the prototype action scene in the bathroom.
Oh, yes. You know?
Because, what was it? Mission Impossible Fallout kind of did the same thing in a way.
Yeah.
With the bathroom fight scene.
Henry.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I think there was one for John Wick in one of the John Wick movies. I could be wrong. But yeah, some of the very, very well made action sequences, them blowing up the bridge with Harrier jet missiles, and which is a model set. Part of it was a model shot too, which I'm amazed. And yeah, just sing praises.
Yeah, I'll also say Tom Arnold is actually funny in this movie to me. He's that annoying best friend who's just having complete fun at his friend's expense.
Right. Well, and Cameron, he auditioned so well that Cameron wanted him to be in the film, and Tom Arnold thought he wouldn't get a role. The studio didn't want Tom Arnold because he was in the public eye at the time fighting with his then wife Roseanne Barr, but mm-hmm. James Cameron basically owned the rights to the film and threatened to take it to another studio if they didn't cast Tom Arnold. So he ended up winning that battle.
Yeah.
That's funny. Whenever they're questioning Jamie Lee Curtis, and he's like, "Yeah, but I guess he's just not getting your rocks off, huh?"
He's like, and Arnold looks at him like, "What?"
He's like, "Let me handle this, man. What the fuck are you doing?" But he plays his character so well. Tom Arnold's definitely one of those guys that helps move the pace of the film, and very memorable. Probably not as funny overall as Bill Paxton is, because he's just like, Bill Paxton, he's this guy that is playing women that doesn't realize he is getting played himself.
So sleazy.
Yeah.
And then we didn't even talk about the great Charlton Heston's in this film.
Yeah,
and man. He even based his character on the look of Nick Fury and everything.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, he and he's just very, kind of hard-nosed. Just, what makes you think any slack that I cut him translates to you? Do you have any hard evidence? No, sir, it's quite limp. I suppose you better get some before someone parks a loaded nuke into the front of the White House. Very short role, but he's you tell he means business, especially since, he once held the Ten Commandments in his hands.
Really?
everyone's gotta say that they've at least browsed by that movie, during Passover. Charlton Heston's on TV.
But also,
people go.
I also I applaud this movie for the final death at the end of the film, where the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been so easy to just knock him off the plane, but they were very creative with it. His backpack catches onto his gun holster catches onto the missile, and he gets shot across through the building carried by the missile. And I think that's really cool. Actually, one of the cooler bad guy death scenes I've ever seen.
Well, Matt wasn't amused when I shared the link of a political version of that. The past election. Yeah, I did. It's like I think I favorited it, but no one said anything because I figured someone got pissed off with it.
I don't even remember it.
But yeah, it's a very creative final action sequence with the whole backpack deal and flying through the building. You're fired.
You're fired. My dad actually stayed in that hotel that they run through and that they go to the top of. He bragged about it this one time. He's like, yeah, they just got done filming True Lies over here. I got to stay in it. And he traveled a lot for work when he worked for BMC Software. And that was one of the cool things. He couldn't bring me back anything from over there. It wasn't really a whole lot of souvenirs, but he used to bring me back stuff. But that was probably the coolest place he ever went to, because I was like, man, that's got to be awesome. He stayed in the same hotel Arnold filmed True Lies in. And I think it's one of the same hotels that gets blown up in either Mars Attacks or Independence Day. I forget which one, but it's the same building that they've used for another film. And yeah, very famous hotel there. I don't know what they've done with it since then, but I guess it was used a lot for shootings.
Yeah,
I didn't realize too that Tom Arnold has made comments before. Think about him and his character and Harry are the only people in the movie that are really honest with each other the entire time, you know, where everyone else is all lying to each other.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Jamie Lee Curtis won a Golden Globe for a role in this too.
Oh, dude. Yeah. She did that helicopter scene on her own on her birthday.
Well, that's stunt work. That has nothing to do with acting. I didn't realize she won a Golden Globe though for it.
Especially the dance. I mean, Jackie was like, she had stepped away. And she wanted me to pause it because her dance scene was coming up, and she loves that scene with Jamie Lee Curtis. She just thinks it's, you know, hilarious and sexy at the same time. And she just has the perfect body for it. You know, she's not super skinny. She's not, you know, heavy. She's kind of like, she's got this long body, and she's got this dancer's body, man. You know, she nails it. Even whenever she falls and gets herself up and, you know, recovers, and it becomes like a very iconic part of that movie that wasn't even supposed to happen. And you can see Arnold, you know, try and get up, and, you know, he wants to go help her, but she gets right back up. It's an ad-libbed scene, really. You know, it's just awesome. A lot of personality in that. And then he's got to use the dude's, he's got to keep rewinding the friggin' tape recorder. The wannabe Antonio Banderas dude was recording lines for him.
Do it, Dosso. Do it slowly.
A sequel was almost made to this movie at one point, which they had a script for and everything. It was going to start shooting around 2000, 2001, and be released in 2002. But 9/11 kind of unfortunately killed the sequel. You know, a lot of people thought it was just Cameron being lazy, as Cameron takes a long time to make films. But no, it was more 9/11. Just terrorists weren't as cool to make movies about there for a while. So Cameron ended up scraping the whole thing, and it never came to fruition. And now and then, every few years or so, it pops up. Like, what about True Lies sequel? And Cameron will like to play the audience in his interviews and say, oh, you know, maybe one day. But let's be honest, it's probably never going to happen at this point.
Nope.
And it would be not with
Avatar too, really. Being filmed.
With that five Avatar films, yeah.
Yeah.
So
you would have to make like Arnold, you know, put him in Charlton Heston's role, basically.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be the guy out there and running around, which he was in his late 40s in this one, and he claimed that he did almost all the stunts. But if you look and you watch some of these scenes a little slowly, I had to find a YouTube channel to help point them out to me. But like the bathroom scene, there's a lot of scenes in there. You can see a body double. The scenes that he did do by himself, the airplane scenes, the Air Force jet scenes, he did that because he had to react to everything. A couple things that he did, but he really only did like half the stunts realistically. He only did half the stunts, and you know, if they redo or do another movie, it's like, you know, you're going to be able to do even less So he's got to be the director role, if that.
Yeah, but I think this is one of those movies.
Yeah.
One of these movies that's good enough on its own. It doesn't need a sequel. You know, if they had done it back at the time, sure. But now it's like, nah.
Yeah. Because it's like, what would you really do it on now? You know, cyber attacks or something? Yeah, I don't know.
But I ranked this movie, though, with a solid A.
Easily. Easy A.
Yep. For me, it's an A plus.
The only thing that keeps it from giving me giving it a plus is, like I said, I found it a little messily edited.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's an A.
Yeah, the pacing is the only thing. You know, they're catching bad guys, and then all of a sudden it slows down whenever you go into the trying to follow his wife Helen, and then all of a sudden the bad guys show up out of nowhere.
Yeah, you know, it's funny too. I was looking, doing some research. Out of all, you know, Cameron's known for his director's cuts. This seems to be the only movie that pretty much what they shot on screen. I couldn't find any information that ever a director's cut existed of this, or even Cameron saying it did. You know, I mean, sure, some deleted scenes, but it's not like The Abyss and Aliens and Terminator 2 that have these massive director's cuts of his.
The claim
like even Avatar has a director's cut that has like 25 more minutes of footage in it. You know,
the claim is that there are deleted scenes, like a few, and that the only way you can find them is through the original script. That, like you said, our director's cut was never released, even on Laserdisc. It came out on Laserdisc. They didn't even put it on Laserdisc.
Interesting. Well, that gets us into today's top five then. Let's top five spy movies, since we just did a spy movie. And who wants to start, or should I start?
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure.
At number five, I have I have a couple of recent films on my list that I purposely left Giant James Bond off on purpose, not because I don't think there aren't James Bond films that are better than some of these films. I just felt that's too easy. I wanted to challenge myself with this list.
Who the hell with that?
So at number five, I have Atomic Blonde, which is a pretty recent release, but I really like that movie quite a bit. I think Charlize Theron is a really good spy in it, and it's a cool story. And I've watched that a few times since it came out. I think it's really well done.
Yeah, she's tough as nails in that film.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go next.
Yeah, okay.
My number five is Harrison Ford movie, Clear and Present Danger. It's a good spy movie in a different sense, where Harrison Ford's character has to basically combat and gather intelligence on drug trafficking. And it's a great movie. Not often spoken about. But Clear and Present Danger is my number five.
Good movie.
Number five for me, I've got the Bourne. Not really the Bourne franchise outside of Bourne Legacy, but Bourne Ultimatum is probably my favorite out of the Bourne films. And definitely a good trio of films. I almost forgot about Atomic Blonde. And,
my problem with the Bourne movies, though, is I was looking at spy movies and stuff, and I saw those listed, but are they really spy movies? Because he's more like this super soldier that gets awoken by this program, and you know,
like he's a sleeper.
When I think of spy, I think of people doing, you know, spy shit.
Yeah, maybe it is kind of borderline, you know, the judgment, is he a spy? Hard to tell, you know, he's not doing stuff that Harry Tasker or James Bond would do, but there's something there. There's some mystery there to that.
Out of all three of them, if there was one that was a spy film, it probably would be Bourne Ultimatum, because he's trying to infiltrate, you know, who did this to him and all that. So yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Long.
Is it number four already?
Wait, you didn't do your number five yet.
Yeah, he did.
No, I did. Clear and Present Danger.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, it's number four. Okay, number four for me.
used to being the first.
Number four, this is a really underrated Ridley Scott film that I think people didn't see, for some reason. And that's Body of Lies with Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe. This is a really solid spy film as he helps Leo infiltrate this terrorist organization and stop them from releasing hell on Earth. Really well acted by Leo and Russell Crowe, too. And some really good action sequences. And also, and it just kind of went under the radar. I don't know why, but it just kind of did. But I think it's a good movie.
Cool. My number four is Mission Impossible Fallout. I liked some of the twists and turns in this movie. The action is rock solid. And yeah, that's my number four. Very impressed.
Number four for me, I had to put this on here because he's the international man of mystery, and that is Austin Powers. The ultimate gentleman spy.
Cool. Even though it's a spoof. Does that count?
Really?
He's a spy, man. He's got to infiltrate women.
I ain't giving you credit on that one.
Well, it does have
spy. You own a penis marker, okay? My awesome power. At number three, I have another really good spy film that kind of some people have seen, some haven't. And this is kind of a deep cut. Long might have seen it. But Robert Redford and Brad Pitt in Spy Game. Man, if you've never seen that, it's really good. As Brad Pitt is captured and Redford is his superior, and they're trying to trace the steps of how he got there and get him out. He looks back at his training to Brad Pitt's character and everything he did. Really, really good movie. One that's almost one that's show worthy that we should do one day, especially if we've never seen it. You know, man, just a good film. Have y'all ever seen Spy Game?
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
Yeah, no. Really. No, actually, no. That's a pretty deep cut. Actually,
yeah, it's excellent. But y'all would really like it. It's not pretty boy Brad Pitt long. Trust me, it's good Brad Pitt.
Oh man, you just know what I was about to say, huh?
Yeah, no, he's really good in the movie.
Well, my number three is another Clancy movie. It's Hunt for the Red October.
I almost put that on my list.
Yeah, and it's more of I don't know. There is some espionage in it on the part of Jack Ryan being a analyst and trying to convince people, but not much undercover work.
Well, yeah, but Sean Connery's character, he's defecting, so that's kind of spyish.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, number three, Hunt for Red October. Great cinematography. John McTiernan directed it. Good script. Very smart dialogue. Well, submarines are basically weapons of spying, gathering intelligence anyways. So yeah, that's my number three pick, Hunt for Red October.
I also have Mission Impossible Fallout on my list. That's my number three. Tom Cruise did all the motorcycle stunts in that movie. He really hung to the side of the plane. He had a harness and everything. He wanted to do it. So, you know, kudos to him still doing all his own stunts, you know.
Well, I also like the double turn towards the third act of the movie, where they're trying to trick information out of the captive? But yeah, it had that moment of trying to gather information by outwitting the perpetrator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Tom Cruise acting as the old guy or something.
Oh yeah,
I think.
At number two, I have the movie we did today, I Have to Realize. That's my number two. We talk about it.
My number two is also another recent movie, and it's based in the 80s. But Atomic Blonde, that's definitely a spy movie. But really good hand-to-hand action sequences, combat, trying to find Charlize Theron's spy, trying to find another spy, I was trying to give them information, and it's kind of a high stakes cat and mouse game of trying to deliver a certain piece of information to the other side of Germany, from East Germany to West Germany. But yeah, Atomic Blonde, number two. At the height of the Cold War, that was set in.
I've got True Lies also at number two. Like Mark said, we just talked about the whole movie. Number two, not a good spot for True, not a bad spot for True Lies.
Yep, and True Lies would have been number one if it wasn't for this movie. And y'all both already had it on y'all's list. And for me, number one is Mission Impossible Fallout. That movie, when it came out a couple years ago, people use words blown away. I was truly blown away. The helicopter sequence at the end, just the whole film, I think it's the best in the Mission Impossible series so far. Talk about a series that ages so well. It's gotten better and better. And say what you want about Tom Cruise and his career and his beliefs, man, he puts his all into making the Mission Impossible series really great. I don't think there's a bad film in that series, but I think the sixth one, Fallout, was the absolute best and one of the best spy action movies we've had in years. It deserves all they got. I mean, you know, it's an excellent, excellent film. I'm really looking forward to part seven and seeing where they go with this series.
My number one is actually the most grounded early Bond film, and that's From Russia with Love. Basically, James Bond versus Spectre under the shadow of the Cold War. Spectre enlists a Russian KGB agent to hunt down Bond while Bond is trying to deliver the microfilm to British intelligence. So, yeah, From Russia with Love.
Yep. If I had a Bond film on my list, I would have put that one on there.
Yeah.
But I was trying to be Bondless.
Not me. It was like spy films. It's like, it's kind of a... But then again, I do have an honorable mention, though.
Everyone knows I love Bond. So no disrespect to Bond.
Yeah. I do have an honorable mention, and that's a Gary Oldman movie that stars Gary Oldman and Benedict Cumberbatch. It came out in 2014, I think. It was called Tinker Tailor Tin Soldier.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Yeah, thank you. That one.
I saw it.
Mm-hmm.
That's a slow movie. It's like, is that what? If that's supposed to be what real spy work is, I'm not interested. But it's still. But according to real life spies, former CIA agents, they said that is the most realistic portrayal of how spycraft works in the real world.
The original film, because you know it's a remake.
Oh,
the
is
original,
it?
Yes, the original film. They claimed there was a guy who was a former spy who worked on the film. So I imagine some of those similarities went into the remake. It is a well acted film. It's extremely slow.
Yeah,
I found it intriguing. I remember watching it when I was still married. I watched it with the ex wife, and she thought it was boring. She didn't like it at all. But I did find it intriguing because it was so well acted.
Yeah.
Matt. I put the best Bond film as of late on there, in my opinion, and that is Casino Royale.
But you said best. Skyfall is better than Casino Royale.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
You think so?
Yeah, the vast majority of people think so. So, yeah.
Is there Ava Green in there?
No, Skyfall is a better movie.
Okay.
But go ahead. Yeah, I just had to correct you. It's fine that you pick Casino Royale. Just correct you that Skyfall is better.
I haven't. To be honest, I have not seen Skyfall yet, so I can get away with. I can get away with it this time, but
I'll have not to watch Skyfall.
I haven't. Jackie saw it. Jackie saw it before I did.
Yeah, it's
oh no, wait. Did I?
It's the absolute best. Skyfall. It's the best of the Craig films, easily.
I haven't seen Skyfall or Spectre. I've only seen up to what I guess Quantum of Solace is the.
Spectre's okay, but Skyfall is really, really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Casino Royale.
I just feel like he's just a complete character in there. You know, he earns the Aston Martin. You go through him becoming a 00 agent. He starts as a 006 right at the beginning. And, you know, he shows his character faults, his cockiness, and, you know, they work in some, you know, believable romance in there. And I just feel like the running scene, just the running scene is just awesome.
Well, everything you just said, your homework assignment, watch Skyfall.
Watch Skyfall? Okay.
You think they develop Bond as a character in Casino Royale? Skyfall.
No, he has Godzilla movies to watch, Mark. No.
I know, but I'm talking about if he thinks they develop Bond as a character in Casino Royale, watch Skyfall. I mean, it's really develops his character.
Okay.
So
is that the one with Batista? Is that the one with Batista as
Batista's the spectre.
Oh, okay.
Skyfall has Javier Bardem as a bad guy.
Oh, okay. I will watch it.
And Javier Bardem's very good in it. I have one small beef with Skyfall, and then we'll get into the news. Is it has that typical bad guy has Bond captured and doesn't shoot him scene. And that's the only thing that bugs me. They do everything right. They do everything right in that film. Except, why did you have to have that scene in this movie? It's like, you know, that trope, because it's like, oh, but oh well. It's just small beef. So, well, yeah. It is part of the bad guy's plan, but still kind of frustrating. So let's get into some news. We're going to roll through these. There's a lot because we've got 2 weeks of news. We got a couple of trailers, the final trailer for the Justice League Snyder Cut and the Mortal Kombat trailer. The Mortal Kombat trailer was okay to me. I just felt like they were just trying to showcase the violence. Didn't get me super excited. I'll still watch it. So kind of how y'all felt, like, eh.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be action.
The look was cool. The Justice League trailer to me was just like, at this point, I just want to see this. I'm still trying to figure out how we go from a 2-hour film to 4 hours. I'm just like, I surely hope it's entertaining for 4 hours.
That's
a long movie.
I'll be interested. I'll be going to some of the DC fan forums to see how they overhype themselves and just to see them tear the movie apart. It's like, why did we go through all this effort just to see a sucky movie? Maybe Warner's was right all along. Who knows? We'll see.
Keanu Reeves and his recent fame has been talking about doing Constantine 2. Well, Warner Brothers says, not so fast. We got other plans. They're going to make a Constantine series for HBO Max instead, pretty much crushing the Constantine 2 rumors. Whatever. I mean, we didn't really need a sequel to Constantine anyway, but we would have watched it. Terminator's going to get an anime series on Netflix.
I didn't know about that one.
Yes. Not much details on it other than that, but, you know, Netflix has been doing a lot of these animes, and so they're going to bring Terminator to animation on their anime platform. Superman is going to get rebooted by J.J. Abrams.
Here we go.
And a writer, I can't think of his name. There's no word whether they didn't say anything about Henry Cavill not coming back. So, you know, we'll see. If we know Abrams' love for nostalgia, chances are it's going to possibly be closer to what the Reeves films were than Man of Steel was. So
his portrayal of Superman hasn't reached its fullest potential yet.
Oh, I agree. And I certainly hope they bring him back.
Yeah.
We got a title for Spider-Man 3, No Way Home, with a cute little video with Tom Holland and the actor plays Ned and Zendaya in it as they reveal the title. And if you look at the interesting note where they show the No Way Home, the spider web around it is the same shape as the state or the what do you call Puerto Rico? The island of Puerto Rico. So it makes you wonder if part of the movie is going to take place there. Neil Blomkamp is writing a script for District 9 sequel called District 10. That I'm pretty excited about. I've really liked almost most of everything Blomkamp has done so far, and very curious.
Even Chappie.
I like the design work of Chappie and the idea of it. I just didn't like the movie as a whole. And I think that's what's great about Blomkamp. He's such a visionary that I want to see what else this guy can do. Yeah, I'm willing to give him a chance. Even things in Elysium. were really good. You know, Elysium wasn't great, but just the design work of it and the vision that Blomkamp has on screen with his science fiction, I think, is really amazing. Amazon's developing a Lady J series based on the G.I. Joe character. And word is that they'd like to have a, how do you say her name? Adrian Palicki?
Palicki, yeah.
Like they'd like to have her back to play Lady J if possible. So, yeah. You know, we'll see what Amazon's doing with that. So Paramount announced their plans for Paramount Plus this week, and they're taking a different approach than HBO did. They're going to still put out movies in theaters, then stuff like Mission Impossible 7, No Time to Die, are going to come out on Paramount Plus 45 days after they're in theaters. Mm. The industry is actually, unlike the HBO plan, the industry has actually kind of seems on board with this. So we'll see how that works. It's only $6 a month. They have a premium one that's $10 a month, where I guess there's no commercials or something like that. So not bad. It launches, I think, in a few weeks here. They're going to do a Beavis and Butthead sequel for Paramount Plus. The Halo TV show has now moved from Showtime to Paramount Plus. If that thing ever comes out, it's been in the works for like 20 years, it seems. There's some other things I read that are coming out to it. So another streaming competitor coming out. But I think that's an interesting plan to put it out 45 days later. Look, a lot of Paramount's major releases don't even come out to the fall anyway. So they're going to see how it works. Maybe movie theaters are kind of starting to open up back by then and making a little box office profit and then go to the streaming platform. So because COVID-19 continues to change the way we get our entertainment.
Yes. So. I'm probably going to get some theater at home for a Monster Hunter this next week.
I wouldn't. Don't pay $20. I have read not very good things about it. Just wait. It'll be out on video. Rent it for $6 soon.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
Yeah. It's not. It wasn't even,
I mean, it looks okay, but yeah.
Yeah. That's what they said. It says decent action sequences, but the movie overall is a mess.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film. I hope you guys remember from the list as we backed everything up, but we're going to do in a old school martial arts film next week in the 36th Chamber of Shaolin.
Men have a right to say what they believe in. Or must they always do what the government says?
He was a hero. Shaolin techniques could be taught here. And the people could use it to fight the Manchu troops.
Get out of here! I nearly died getting a Shaolin. I won't leave now. Ah!
I've never seen this movie.
Never? Wow.
No. I may have seen it, don't remember that I saw it. It could be one of those kind of movies.
Yeah.
Like sometimes with the old Godzilla films.
Yeah.
I don't always remember I saw them. Then I watch them like, oh yeah, I've seen this. You know.
Matt, don't buy it because it's on Netflix.
Okay. And on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
and on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's on. I think it's on Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Good to know.
The Sixth Chamber.
I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be fun. We haven't done a martial arts film since The Raid, you know, so it's been a while since we've done a martial arts film, so it should be a lot of fun to talk about next week on the show. And, yeah. But it was good to be back this week after taking a week off, and now I just hope I get my water running by the time I release this episode, and or otherwise I'm going to get really stinky. No, I will be going to my mom's again tomorrow for a shower. But thank you as always for listening. Remember, the RebelRadioPodcast.com is your home for all the needs of the show, our social media, our Patreon, and all that good stuff. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Omega agent.
Until next time, remember as always, just go there and
do it.
Do it.